This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Teamsters Local 206, helping Oregon's working families fight for good jobs and a better future. For information about how the Teamsters can help you win respect at work, the number is 503-251-2344. And also by Ask Me Local 88, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concern, Transition Projects, and American Friends Service Committee. More information at 503-239-9858 or www.local88.ws.
Greetings, KABU listeners, and welcome to Labor Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO, 90.7 in the Portland metropolitan area, 91.9 in Hood River and the beautiful Columbia River Gorge, 100.7 in the Willamette Valley, and streaming live at www.kboo.fm. And I'd like to give a special hello to all you labor leaders out there listening in on the web. On tonight's show, the Great Tax Shift, how corporations are paying less and less in state taxes, leaving workers to pick up the slack. Could this be the year progressive taxation is reborn? This is your host and friendly neighborhood letter carrier, Kevin Card, and tonight we will be talking with taxation expert Reese Scholes, and we'll be taking your comments and questions. You can call us live here at 503-231-8187. I also have another special guest in the studio, Susha Pratt, who is taking your tax money and putting it to great work here in the Portland community, and we'll be talking about that a little bit later. But first, let's talk taxes. It's tax day. You know, I went down to the post office today just to see if there was a line, and there was a handful of people putting their taxes in. I think the lines come later for all you procrastinators. But yesterday here in Portland, our local paper, The Oregonian, featured a front-page article on the great tax shift that has taken place here in the state of Oregon, and which is mirrored in both some federal taxation and in other states around the country. The cover of their Sunday paper said, "Feeling taxed, not big business," and that's what I'm here to talk about. My first guest, Reese Scholes, is a longtime community activist and researcher who's looked into Oregon's tax structure and will share his findings with you, dear listeners. And remember, you can put the U back in community radio and join us by calling 503-231-8187. Reese Scholes, welcome to Labor Radio.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your history before we start talking about taxation. How did you get onto this subject?
Well, I'm somebody who's cared about public services for a long time. My labor background is with SEIU Local 503 and state employees who help a lot of folks with social services around the state, and have always cared a lot about the clients that they serve and the money that funds those services. So I got interested there. The last 3 years, I was with Citizens for Oregon's Future, an organization that was supported by labor and was dedicated to the idea that we needed to help people have a better understanding of the way taxes and budgets work, because there's been a lot of confusion, and our Oregon tax and budget system is complicated. So I've been involved for years in a variety of ways, both as an advocate and as sort of a community educator, trying to help people understand the connection between the money we pay and the services that come into our community. And it's not always simple, so it's an uphill struggle, and I'm glad we're talking about it this evening.
So what has happened here with this great corporate tax shift that you've noticed in your looking at the Oregon tax system?
I think if you take the really big picture and look at what's gone on with taxes over the last 20 years or so, the average burden on Oregon households has remained about the same, and the burden on corporations has just plummeted. The one way to think about it is that in over about 20 years, it's fallen by about half. That corporations, business generally, are paying about half of what they paid proportional to the economy 20 years ago. And at the same time, the public services that we need have become much more expensive. And the biggest reason for that is health care. And I don't think it's any surprise to the listeners to your show that health care has just become more and more and more expensive. And government pays a lot of health care costs. So while our contributions have been steady, businesses have plummeted, and the cost of really taking care of our community has gone up, and that's what's caused a real crisis in the state where we don't have enough money to pay for human services, we don't have enough money to pay for schools, we're really dramatically underfunded for the kind of services that our community expects.
And how has that come about? How can taxes just suddenly get halved for corporations? Who's responsible for doing it?
Well, it's a combination of several things. A lot of my good friends in extra-liberal Southeast Portland picture cigar-chomping lobbyists who go down to the state legislature and get tax breaks for big corporations, and that's about half of it. The corporations used to pay taxes on a formula that looked at how much presence the corporation had in the state, how many facilities they had, how many employees they have. We've now moved to what's called the single sales factor. And this was something that the corporate lobbyists fought for in Salem, and it means that corporations are only paying taxes on what they sell here. So the best example, what used to be one of Oregon's biggest taxpayers was Intel, which has a lot of operations here in the state. And they're after this year, they're no longer going to pay taxes based on the operations they have on the state, but on what Intel sells in the state. And even though you might have bought a computer with an Intel chip here in Oregon, they didn't sell that chip here in Oregon. They sold that wherever your computer came from. So Intel sales in the state aren't very high. So they're going from being one of the largest contributors to public services in the state to being a very small one. So that's part of it. Then there's another part of it that didn't require any lobbyists to chomp on any cigars. What happened in the 1990s was we had a real estate boom in Oregon. And so the proportion of the property taxes that are paid by big business has dramatically decreased because residential property has become much more expensive. And I think that, a lot of working people have seen the cost, the value of their home go up dramatically. Commercial industrial property hasn't gone up as fast, and that has created, without any change in the law, a huge shift in where the property taxes come from. And because property taxes are a significant cost of way we pay for, like, our public service, public safety system, police and fire, those expenses are still there, but the where the money comes from has really shifted. A few other factors, too, tax breaks and some other things, have made it possible for corporations to pay much less than they used to.
Well, let's talk about how we pay for things in the state of Oregon. Mm-hmm. I heard a comparison recently where they were talking about it as some kind of a stool, right? A three-legged stool, uh-huh, or more like a two-legged stool, which will tip over, right, quite easily.
A lot of states have what they call the three-legged stool, and that means that there's taxes on property, taxes on income, and taxes on sales. Oregon's never had a sales tax, so we've always had the two-legged stool. The big sources of state and local money for state and local services in Oregon are the income tax, which is collected statewide, comes out of your paycheck, just like your federal taxes do, and then the property tax, which is collected locally. Now, some people who own their homes pay the property tax directly to the county. Other folks who have a mortgage on their house will pay it as part of their mortgage payment. But renters pay property taxes, too, because it's really part of the expenses that you reimburse your landlord for. And if you're a renter, you can guess that about 17% of your rent is going to property taxes. Now, that property taxes are going to state and local governments. A big chunk's going to schools, and the other big chunks are going to police and fire. The income tax that's going to the state, the biggest chunk of that is also going to schools. Schools are overwhelmingly the largest thing we fund with our state and local taxes, but then they also pay for, like, the state prison system, which is real, going up, becoming much more expensive as a result of some things we voted for, and then that health care, which is costing us more every day.
And you are listening to Labor Radio here on KBOO. If you'd like to call in with a comment or a question on tax day, you can give us a call at 503-231-8187. And I'm here with Reese Scholes, and we're talking about the great corporate tax shift, about how individuals in this state are paying more and more of a share for state services and corporations are paying for little. You know, some people make this argument, Reese, that well, if we tax corporations, they're just going to charge us more for their products, and we'd end up paying that tax anyways. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, it's partially true. Let's take a step back. If we got an economics professor in here, they'd say there's three places that a corporation can come up with the money to pay their taxes. Number one, they can raise their prices. Number two, they can cut the pay of their workers. And number three, they can cut the profit of their owners. Now, as the economists study what happens to those taxes, it depends on who you're taxing and what the economic situation is. We know that, for example, if you increase property taxes on landlords, well, that's going to affect all of the apartment buildings in the community, and son of a gun, those landlords are going to pass through that property tax increase to the renters. We believe if you increase the tax on the property tax on landlords, it's going to go through to renters. Now, if we increase property taxes on Intel, are they going to pass that through to the buyers of computer chips? Not so much, because when Intel sets their pricing strategy, they're really competing with all the other people who make computer chips, and that's going to be the big factor in their prices. So it depends on who you tax, how much it gets passed through. If you tax the grocery store, it's probably going to be some combination. You know, a penny less for the workers, a penny more on the price, and a little bit lower stock return to the Kroger company or whoever.
Well, you brought up something really interesting. You talked about Intel to start off with and about this new tax scheme that they've somehow sold to the legislators. This was a legislative effort that changed the law here?
That's right. The state legislature has first gradually and then wholeheartedly shifted what they tax corporations on to do big favors for corporations like Intel that have a lot of manufacturing presence in the state.
But that's not the only tax break that Intel gets to stay in Oregon, is it?
No, Intel also is a beneficiary of the Strategic Investment Program, which is a complicated state law that requires county approval. It's both the state of Oregon and Washington County, but essentially the theory behind that is if they've built some new buildings and put in a bunch of equipment, and they don't have to pay property taxes on that because we think it's so great that they've done that, and we're so happy with all the income taxes that their workers are paying that we're just not going to make them pay property tax on that stuff.
So they're getting it both ways.
That's right. And it interestingly, it sort of spreads the pain between local government and state government and what have you. They're getting tax cuts all across the board.
Well, I'm looking here at a report that came out that was just put out this weekend by the Oregon Center for Public Policy talking about this tax shift. And it's pretty amazing when you read that in the next budget cycle, which is how we in Oregon pay, we have a two-year budget cycle, corporations will pay just 4.5% of Oregon's income taxes, and individual taxpayers will pay 95.5%. How does that stack up to the way taxes are paid around the country?
We now have the lowest share of taxes paid by corporations of any state in the nation. The business lobby has been fantastically successful, and the business community has been sort of lucky in the way the property tax stuff has come down, and the net result is that no other state has business paying a smaller percentage as we do. In fact, we're less than half of what our neighbor to the north, Washington State, has as a direct burden on businesses.
Well, you would think that businesses would be banging down the door then to move into Oregon. Has that been the case? Has it been an enticement?
During the same period of time that we were dramatically slicing our corporate taxes, we had a few years ago the highest unemployment rate of any state in the nation. So It's hard to argue that it has been a huge boon to the Oregon economy. There's really very little evidence that cutting corporate taxes has any significant increase in job creation or the important measures of the economy.
So we're in an election year. It's an election year here in Oregon, and there are about a half a dozen candidates or more running for governor. And it seems like every single Republican candidate talks about cutting business taxes more. I mean, how can they cut them if they're the lowest in the nation right now?
Well, this is, unfortunately, very few Oregonians really understand what the current tax structure is. And because so many of those candidates over the years have had so many TV commercials talking about how we desperately need to cut business taxes more, a surprising number of Oregonians still believe that's the case. And I guess they must be getting votes from talking about what they're talking about. But the idea that further business cuts would somehow improve our economy is really ludicrous if you look closely at it.
Now, a bit of this came from a ballot measure, too, from ballot measure 50, I believe.
Ballot measure 47 and then 50 was the second of our two property tax reducing measures. We've had two big property tax cutting measures in Oregon. Measure 5 in 1990 and then kind of a pair. Measure 47 was replaced by measure 50 in 1996 and 97. And between the two of them, they've dramatically lowered our property taxes.
And that has been a boon to corporations also.
It has. Now let's be clear. Property tax limitation also reduced property taxes on homeowners and on a lot of working families as well, but proportionately the benefit has been much higher for business, and particularly businesses that are property intensive. One of the things that's worth thinking about when you think about business taxation is some businesses have a lot of income and some businesses have a lot of property, and you find in the business community some squabbling over how business taxes should be organized. But the businesses that have a lot of property, think utilities that own a lot of physical plant and places with big manufacturing, but also like chain stores that have a lot of real estate, those folks have done very, very well under property tax limitation.
Yet we're not showing the outpouring in jobs that they say. I mean, corporations come in here and they sell the American public that they almost hold a gun to our community's heads, don't they? An economic gun to our heads and say, give us this tax break or we're going to move out. But that doesn't always happen, does it?
No. A few years ago, there was a debate on the strategic investment program in Multnomah County, and a company, Fujitsu, which has since pulled up stakes and hauled out, was in Oregon demanding this tax break or else they'd move someplace else, and their CEO was in Tokyo talking to the financial press and telling them that those tax break decisions made no difference whatsoever to where they located plants. And the research shows that that's the most common thing, that taxes really have much less of an impact on where businesses locate, and that the things that we pay for with taxes probably have a much higher impact.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that the things that are most important to infrastructure, that's most important to businesses, and varies somewhat from business to business, but is education, that you need skilled workers to do the job, and more Oregon companies are finding that they can't find workers with the skills to do it, and not coincidentally, we have a dramatic disinvestment in our higher education system. Tuitions are way up. And our K-12 system is chronically underfunded. And we also have big problems in Oregon with things like transportation infrastructure. And you hear many business leaders say, well, if we can't get the products to market, how can we make a profit? So, and those are things that are paid for with our tax money, and the decrease of our tax money has made it harder to provide that infrastructure to businesses.
But wasn't there just a business summit here within the last year or so in which the business community got together with the governor and said that they wanted to prioritize what was important in Oregon? And wasn't education at the top of that list?
That's right. There's a lot of business leaders who are now saying we dramatically need to increase the investment in education because they need more training for the workers to do the jobs of the future. But at the same time, they don't support tax increases, and particularly they don't support business tax increases because they're hoping that somebody else will support tax increases and that the tax increases will fall on households and not on businesses because, after all, these business leaders have a fiduciary responsibility to the stockholders of their company to not do anything that would decrease their financial position, and supporting more taxes arguably does. I think that there's business leaders who feel that it would be against the law for them to support tax increases on business, on their own business, certainly, because they'd be violating the interest of their stockholders.
Well, it seems to me that stockholders are now the new protected class in this country. Mm-hmm. It seems like everything that all the economic arguments that get made around the idea that we can't decrease shareholder value, right?
That's right.
And that drives a lot of these bad decisions that they make.
Right, and that we can't have sustainable profits. We have to have maximum profits. We have to have growing profits. And it's very difficult to see how that pairs with sustainable communities.
You are listening to Labor Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 503-231-8187. Reese, what have other states done in the area of taxation to try and is Oregon amongst a lot of states? Is everybody making this mad rush to cut corporate taxes?
There certainly are bidding wars to get corporations to locate, and there's a very unhealthy competition between localities. The kind of the strategic investment program, the property tax breaks for Intel out in Washington County are characteristic of that, and there's a variety of special treatment. But keep in mind that most other states are doing that starting from a base of much higher business taxes than we have here. The Washington state, you know, starts with business taxes that are more than twice as high, the biggest one being their business and occupation tax, which is a tax on the gross receipts of businesses. See, when you go to tax businesses, most of the taxes that we have, other than property taxes, are based on their net income. And it's funny how they can adjust that net income so it turns out that they have none. And so many businesses now pay $10 in corporate income tax because by the time their tax form is done, son of a gun, they've just deducted every bit of profit that they made. Washington State has a better tax. They tax businesses on their gross at a much lower percentage, but they don't let them go through all those deductions and loopholes. They just say, how much did you take in? Okay, you're going to pay 0.75%, 0.75% on that. And so they're able to get a much higher level of taxes from business. And then, of course, then when they come to make tax cuts, they can offer those businesses a reduction but still have enough money to keep their school system going. We're in a different position. We're starting at such a low rate, every tax cut that we give business comes away from vital services.
So what do you think needs to be done? What do you believe needs to be done to the tax structure here in Oregon to make it a little more fair? And we really have a stability problem in this state, don't
we? Right. I think that the good news is I think that there are several viable options that are worthy of consideration. One way to look at it is to look at the property tax reductions that we had in the 90s, those ballot measures we talked about earlier, and to say, okay, property taxes were pretty darn high in 1989, and that would be true. We had, particularly in the city of Portland, we had very high property taxes, but that we cut them so dramatically that now we can't pay for services. If we were to do some modification of the way our property tax limitations work and reclaim a little bit of that, then we could probably make up a bunch of the deficits that we have in our system now. So moderating property tax limitation would be one way to do it. Another way to do it would be to create a new tax. The tax that's been discussed in Oregon the most is a sales tax. And what that means in most states is a retail sales tax that's paid by consumers, largely not paid by businesses. Given that we've had this big tax shift, probably a retail sales tax is not the way to redress this shift. It would likely make the shift worse.
That would increase the shift, right? It would shift even more to the backs of working folks, right?
That's right. But the tax that I just talked about up in Washington State is possibly a very good model for Oregon. It's one of the advantages is because that tax is collected right across the border from us, businesses are familiar with it. And because it's been collected for many years, while Washington's economy has done fine, Amazon decided to move to Seattle, not to Portland, because they fund their schools better, and that was important to them. Even though Amazon pays a fortune in this business and occupation tax because they have a lot of transactions, we could have a tax like that. The downside is it would probably slightly increase prices. Some of it would be passed along to consumers, but because it's a very broad tax, when Intel sells chips to Hong Kong, there would be some transaction tax that would be calculated on that, and so it would be fair. In general, I think what we want to learn from the professors of tax policy is that really broad taxes at the lowest possible rates tend to be more fair, and taxes that concentrate just on households to the exclusion of business, obviously much less fair. So we could look at a kind of a business tax like Washington has. If you look at countries around the world, they use a value-added tax, which is a little bit like a sales tax, but also taxes a lot of different kind of transactions between businesses. A couple of states, New Hampshire and Michigan in the U.S., have taxes that are like that. So there are several options in that area, and it may be that the best thing would be a little bit of each, a little bit of modification of property tax limitation, and then some kind of broad tax that would cover a lot of business transactions, could bring in some more money.
Well, I'm consistently surprised to find working class people who buy into the idea that we need a sales tax in this state. Why? What do you think that comes from?
Well, I think the simplest thing is that people who have lived in other states that have the three-legged tax stool have not seen the kind of constant crises in funding public services that we have here. And they reason that, if you have a sales tax, then there's money to pay for schools. And in a way, that's true. And let me also say that some of the concern that working folks have always had about sales tax can in some ways be solved by how you structure the tax system. It would be possible for progressive folks to support an overhaul of the tax system in Oregon that might include a sales tax component if at the same time we changed our income tax so that it didn't fall so heavily on working families. One of the things that's different about Oregon's income tax than other states' income tax is that low-income families pay a substantial amount of income tax in Oregon. That's not true, for example, in California. California has the three legs of the tax stool, but if you really dig down and get at how the tax burden is divided, it's not terribly different in California than in Oregon because California's income tax is so much more progressive than ours that it offsets some of the regressivity of the sales tax. And regressivity means that lower income folks are paying a higher percentage of their taxes than upper income folks are. Our neighbor to the north, Washington, has the most regressive tax system in the state, in the nation. The lowest income families in Washington State are paying 14% of their income in taxes, and the highest income families in Washington State, I won't name any names, think software, they're paying about 4% of their income. Dramatic, dramatic shift.
How did that happen?
It's because Washington doesn't have an income tax. Oregon doesn't have a sales tax, never has. Washington's never had an income tax. It's our income tax that really does a pretty good job of collecting money from high wage earners. And when business complains about our tax structure, what they're really complaining about is Oregon's income tax that's 9% on wages. But it's also 9% on profits. So somebody with a good union job is paying a pretty hefty amount of Oregon State income taxes, and somebody with a very successful small business is paying the same thing. When the businesses complain about those high taxes, it's that. In Washington State, those businesses aren't paying any income tax, and as a result, the very wealthy folks have a much lower tax burden because of the absence of the income tax. Oregon's income tax is the one thing that keeps our system from being less less fair than it would otherwise be. We have a pretty good system for spreading the tax burden around families of different incomes. It's just that we don't have business carrying their share.
So businesses aren't paying that, is what you're I'm a little confused here. I thought Oregon's, it seemed to me like Oregon's income tax was fairly flat. Is that true?
It's not true. It looks like that because you look at the tax rates, and I know a lot of us are just doing our taxes. I still have mine to do when I get home. But our highest tax rate kicks in at a relatively low rate. We have 5.7% and 9%, and the 9% kicks in around $12,000 for a two-person family.
Right.
But the way we figure our taxes in Oregon, you get deductions off the beginning and then credits off of the end, and those are more like a flat rate. So they mean a lot more to the lower-income households than to the upper-income households. So families that have an income around $10,000 or $12,000 may only be paying 2% in income tax, whereas families that are above $100,000 are going to be paying 7 or 8% in income tax because of the way the deductions and the credits work. But it's very confusing, and particularly I found that people who don't do their own taxes are totally confused about it. And people who can't do percentages in their heads very well, they don't understand how it works. I was lucky enough to get to talk to a group of nurses, to the nurses union about this. And nurses can understand their taxes because they can figure it out in terms of percentages.
Because they have to do percentages for drugs that they give to people, right?
That's right.
They have to look at body weight and figure percentages and stuff like that.
If you can do percentages in your head, you can really understand the way the tax system works. But if you just look at the flat dollar amount, it all looks like a bunch of money. And what you heard on those TV commercials from the right-wing Republican politicians kind of mixes together, and you believe, you know, government's gouging me and that business is getting gouged and all of that stuff. But if you look at the real numbers, and they're all a public record, you know, if you spend any time on the Internet, you can find all of these real numbers. It's very clear what's going on.
I was just thinking probably waiters and waitresses probably.
Yeah.
They understand percentages very well, don't they?
That's right.
They know when they get stiffed.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know? And there's a lot of them out there. I have this hobby that because I do this labor radio program, I always talk to people about their jobs. That's how Sushi got here. I'm always asking people, what do you do for a living and stuff? And I'm just amazed at how many of the young people who live in Portland have 2, 3, 4 jobs. It's just amazing how many jobs they have just to try and make ends meet, just to be able to live here.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
And those young single people are paying a substantial amount of Oregon income tax.
Why is that?
Because of the way we have, because a lot of the progressivity in our income tax comes from credits and exemptions around having dependents. And if you don't have dependents and you don't have a mortgage, it's surprising how much state income tax you can pay on a very low-wage job. Not so in California. California gives low-income folks a big break. Of course, they're paying a sales tax there. But our income tax is unusually high on the very lowest-wage workers, particularly the single ones who don't have any credits.
And you are listening to Labor Radio here at KBOO Community Radio. And if you'd like to join in the conversation, you can give us a call at 503-231-8187. What about federal taxation? How progressive or regressive is the federal tax system?
Well, if you just look at the rates, the federal taxes are much more progressive than the state taxes.
Progressive meaning fairer.
Now, there's two parts to my answer here. If we just look at the way it's supposed to be, those folks who I was just concerned about, how they're, low-income, single folks, maybe on their first job, maybe making minimum wage, they're going to pay much more in state income taxes than federal income taxes because the federal government does a better job of giving those folks a break. And for low-income families, the working poor, the earned income tax credit and the child tax credits are really now helping out low-income workers. And that's a good thing and kind of remarkable in terms of what the politics of our country are, that we're doing good on that. And it looks like the rates on upper-income folks, while they've dropped, are still pretty substantial. But that's not the whole story, because now there are so many ways that upper-income folks can hide their income. So the difference between what's on the books and what actually gets collected is very, very different. David,
what do you mean hide it? Are we talking shoeboxes under the mattress, or what are we talking about hiding your income?
Some of it, particularly in Oregon, where we have a high income tax, there's a tremendous incentive for tax evasion. So there is the underground economy, and that's going on all the time, where people are getting paid in cash. If you've ever had somebody do some work on your house and they give you a discount for cash, that's probably because they're evading taxes and they don't have to pay taxes if they don't have it on the books. Much more complicated and much more useful to the very high-income folks are various tax shelters, off-shelter, Cayman Islands, a whole series of ways that that money comes into a company and is then hidden. Compensation goes to individuals in ways that doesn't have to be reported, or sometimes it's just under the table. So it's not so much in shoebox. Think about plain brown envelopes and very highly compensated attorneys and accountants who figure out a variety of tax shelters that are sometimes legal, sometimes quasi-legal, but we're losing billions and billions and billions of dollars, and it means that the super rich are paying a very low effective tax rate, what they actually pay. David K. Johnson has written several books. I know he's been in Portland and spoken a couple times eloquently on how they do that and what a terrible thing it is for our society.
Well, I'll tell you, I work out in Lake Oswego. So, and there's a handful of wealthy people out there. They're not hurting. You know, I tell everybody when the economy goes down, I see the same number of brand new SUVs and you know, the housing prices keep going up. So there is a huge question of fairness in our tax system that we need to address. On the flip side of that, there are good things that we pay taxes for, right?
Amen.
In the state of Oregon, you know, we like you said, the primary... The big slice of the pie is our schools.
Right.
And we'd like to spend more on it if you're a school activist. Right? Healthcare is another thing. You mentioned healthcare, which is, of course, an issue that comes up in any discussion around labor, because healthcare is our number one top issue. Former Governor Kitzhaber is putting together a plan right now to try and offer healthcare to every Oregonian. Mm-hmm. Right? That is probably not something we can do in our current tax structure, is it?
No, it's if we could get a handle on how much money the health insurance companies are taking, it would be great if we could add that to the pie, and that would help a lot. But we've got a real problem with the demographic shift. Since we're living so much longer lives, the ratio of retirees to active workers is changing, and there are many, many more people who are past the working years who are going to need to be taken care of by a smaller number of people who are still working.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some good things our taxes do here. And this is something that I just pulled off the web. Very interesting thing for people to think about. Let me just read this to you. It's called Talking Taxes, and it says, "The truth is our quality of life is far safer and more convenient because of government ordinances, regulations, and inspections." This person says, "Follow me through a typical day and I'll show you what I mean. Government services and regulations may seem invisible, but they're everywhere you look. I wake up and brush my teeth with water whose purity is inspected by government agencies. I pour some cereal and milk into a bowl. No bugs in there. Both are regulated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Federally mandated labels on the cereal box and milk container, moreover, list the ingredients contained inside. Your tax money at work. I leave home, and in the middle of the street or intersection are city workers doing maintenance on the sewer system. And that's our tax system at work, all right? You jump in your car, and you're reassured that the smog device in your 20-year-old car recently passed our state's stringent test because of your tax system, right? There are all these incredible things. And so we have this great person in our studio tonight to tell us about how our tax money is being spent in a wonderful way here in Portland. And that is Susha Pratt, who works for AmeriCorps at the Community Cycling Center. Susha, welcome to Labor Radio.
Thank you very much.
So tell us about your job. Tell us about what you do, and tell us about a little bit about AmeriCorps. I had met Susha at one of the Community Cycling Center's fundraisers, the worst day of the year ride, and she told me about this really neat job she had, and I was so excited when I meet somebody who works for the government, does great stuff, right? And so tell us about how you got into this.
Okay. Well, my friend Mackenzie was an AmeriCorps member, and she told me about her job. She was working out in Wilsonville with kids and doing environmental education, and told me how she got a stipend after 10 months of AmeriCorps work, and at the end she got an education award, and it sounded like a great job. So I applied, and you can choose where you want to be placed, and I had done some volunteering with the Community Cycling Center before and thought it would be a great place to be for 10 months. So I chose that as my first choice and interviewed, and now I'm working there. And I'm the recycling coordinator, which I coordinate recycling. I work with volunteers tearing down bikes, ones that we can't reuse in the shop, ones that can't be resold in retail. I work with kids, and we reuse all parts of the bike that we can. That's kind of our goal, is reuse as much as possible, work with other companies. We have a company called Resource Revival that takes all our used chain and freewheels and steel rims, and they make art out of it, which is really fun.
They take all of them?
Well, the non-rusty ones, yeah.
Right. Huh.
And we just started a partnership with a bag company up in Seattle. They make messenger bags out of used inner tubes. Yeah, it's really great. So we send up our used inner tubes. He makes really nice messenger bags and sells them. So my job is kind of just maintaining those relationships, trying to find new outlets for reuse, and then recycling bikes that we can't reuse in the shop or sell again or give to all our programs that we do.
Wow, that's outstanding. And it's funny, we were talking about this before the show, and when I brought up AmeriCorps, of course, Reese knew all about this, too. He knew a bit about how AmeriCorps works. So I went to try and figure out, okay, how does AmeriCorps work? Where does the money come from? How is our tax money distributed? And Reese, maybe you can pitch in on this. I mean, apparently there are a number of filters to get it down to hire Susha.
That's our federal tax money. The money you're sending in to Ogden, Utah tonight.
Right. Fresno, California.
There you go. Comes back out in grants, and it's one of the reasons it's so confusing to people about the way it works. Some of the money goes from the federal government to the state government and then to local governments. Some goes from the federal government to regional consortiums. There's several different patterns by which they give out the funding, but AmeriCorps is one of the shining examples of how a little bit of tax money can leverage with great things that are going on in the community to accomplish much more than you would expect to be able to accomplish with each dollar that's spent that way.
Mm-hmm. So Susha, tell me about this. You did you have to write up your own proposal with the Community Cycling Center, or did they have this position already? Or?
No, yeah, I'm the fourth of my kind, the fourth recycling coordinator. Yeah, so actually one of our past recycling coordinators works there now. He has a job as a programs person. So it's been around for 4 years, and the Community Cycling Center has to write the proposal to get the position, and they pay a certain amount for that year to have me be there, and AmeriCorps pays me for a part of that, for my stipend. So the Community Cycling Center is basically getting a really good deal by just paying a bit and having a full-time, I'm there full-time. So.
So the stipend, is that enough to live on?
Well, I have another job.
There we go.
So, yeah, it would be enough to live on. I feel like I live pretty frugally, but it helps to have my other job. It's a serving job, and so I'm able to actually do pretty well.
Now, was it the service part of AmeriCorps that got you? Was it the idea that you could come into your community and you could give something back to it? I mean, that's the way I look at it. You know, I always like to think the world's this big, wonderful place where people do things for wonderful reasons.
And well, yeah, it was definitely that. I mean, I was moving back into Portland after being here for school and coming back and being like, okay, I'm not a student. I don't have a lot of experience maybe in the job market. What what can I do? And I knew that Mackenzie had been doing that, and it was working out really well for her, and she decided to stay. You can do it for 2 years maximum. You can get 2 education awards. So I knew that it was a great experience for her, so she did it again, and I thought, well, I'll try that and see how it goes. And definitely it's a way to be a part of the community and kind of get some job training skills and kind of a way to get your foot in the door without having a lot of experience. But, you know, I want to do nonprofit work or I want to be in education, but it's hard to get in when you haven't done that and you've only been a student and have a degree. So it's a really good way to do that.
I tell you, I listened to this like, is this a great country or what? You know, I mean, the potential we have here to do great things with a meager amount of resources is fantastic when you have hardworking, creative people who make it happen.
And this kind of visionary stuff, I mean, the work that you're doing at the Community Cycling Center contributes to us not having to build more expensive interstate highways 20 years from now, because if we get those kids on their bikes early, then maybe we can do something about our very expensive traffic and transportation things. It's all linked together.
Tell me, do these kids think about, so you talk to them about recycling, do they get the whole recycling idea?
I think so. They get a lot of the, like, recycling in school, like recycle paper and that kind of stuff. Sometimes it's really fun to see kids, like, today we were making mustaches out of bike helmet pads. And so we showed them where it's coming from. You know, this is stuff we don't know what to do with it. We're going to just throw it away. Or we can make mustaches. And then they started making eyebrows and bunny ears. And so it's really cool to see them think about reuse instead of just recycle.
Right, right.
And try to think, like, oh, what can we make out of this cool art? Or, like, inner tubes we make, like, bracelets and necklaces and whatever, and then kids get really creative, and it's really fun to see.
So what kind of volume of metals do they recycle every month at the Community Cycling Center?
Quite a bit. We just recently started recycling aluminum as well, and that's been a good step for us. But we get probably over in 1 year, we last year we recycled over 64,000 pounds of scrap metal, and
when you think of how lightweight a bike is, that's a lot of metal. Lot of metal. So there's lot of people donating bicycles to the community.
Yeah, a lot of people give. We're kind of known as like the donation where to take your bike is, you know, the Community Cycling Center, and you know, we even had some guy come from the coast bring out a bunch of bikes and be like, I heard you take bikes, so we're recycling their bikes as well, and people, you know, from spring cleaning to bike collections, REI and some other companies around Portland collect bikes for us. And so we have a lot of partnerships that we work with.
So as part of the AmeriCorps thing, are you supposed to be learning something here, or is it just totally a giving thing? Is there, I mean, what's the educational, you talk about an education award. What is the education award?
Well, that's for my personal use afterwards if I wanted to pay off my loans or go to
really?
School
again.
Oh, really?
You can actually use it for your student loans?
Yeah, it's taxed, but after tax, it's about $4,500. So
that's
really, it's great. So I probably will maybe take some classes after that. But it's also really nice. AmeriCorps is great because they give you time for kind of like professional career development. So I can, if I want to, I can go to like lectures or workshops or symposiums and get hours towards my total hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's really nice. They have that freedom. They give you that.
And what's your commitment? What do you have to, what is it, when you sign up, you know, I grew up in the Peace Corps era, you know, when you signed up for 2 years, I believe, in the Peace Corps someplace. Mm-hmm. What's your, AmeriCorps, you commit to 1 year?
It's 11 months of service and 1,700 hours. So we're always keeping track of our hours and what we're doing and a lot of...
Is there paperwork you have to file with the AmeriCorps to make so they make sure, and somebody has to sign and say, she was here?
Exactly. So we're just tracking our hours, and it's, you know, divvied up into service hours, individual development hours, core development hours, and it gets kind of confusing, but we just keep track of it all, and at the end it needs to be 1,700, and then we graduate and get our education award.
So you've been at it how long now? You've been at it for 4 months?
I started at the end of January, so 3 months about.
And what do you think so far?
I'm really liking it, actually. Right. I love it. I feel like really lucky to be at the Community Cycling Center, and I really like my position because it's a little bit of everything. I'm in the office emailing people, and then I can go outside and tear down bikes with kids, and then I can, you know, volunteer with adults at night, and just I'm kind of all over, and I get to work with the mechanics, I get to work with the office staff, I get to work with everyone, and I like it. I feel like I don't want it to end, kind of.
Well, I think this is a good use of our tax money. I think that, you know, I think if we're going to, you know, I think community investment is what we look for our tax money to go towards, whether it's the schools or the highways or something. But this is a totally new way that I think people can get involved. If a person wanted to explore getting into the AmeriCorps, how would they do that?
I would say if you have access to internet, look online, search Google for AmeriCorps.
Do they post jobs? Do they actually post AmeriCorps jobs on there?
Or how does that work? They do. And I have my position through the Northwest Service Academy, which has a website, and they post jobs in Oregon, in Portland and Vancouver.
Now, is that kind of a coordinator for AmeriCorps?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like they got through AmeriCorps and they have all these positions. I'm on a team of 17 other women that are placed around Portland. And
what other kind of jobs do they have? What else?
Lot of like watershed restoration and just habitat restoration. It's fairly environmentally based.
The Northwest Service Academy is environmentally based.
Yeah, so there'll be people at like Rock Creek Watershed Council or Metro Regional and places like that.
Well, you know, I had to write a big check to the IRS yesterday, and I just tried to focus on Sushin or job there. To go, this is what it's all about. This is what I'm funding. Yeah. So I feel good about that. You know?
Yeah. There's a lot of AmeriCorps volunteers working in our schools, working in early childhood, doing great, great stuff. And if you think about the difference between, you know, a tax break for business and helping folks who are getting started on their working life get some practical experience while they're serving the community, I mean, this is really a threefer. There's the children who get exposure to a caring adult, and we know that that's going to help them be successful in life. The volunteers themselves who get good work experience and the work that gets done. I mean, that's really, you give credit. It's good to give government credit for spending money in ways that gives so many different benefits.
I think we do. I think that, you know, Americans love to complain. I think one of the things we complain about is big government all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big proponent of big government myself. I do think that there are very important thing work that needs to be done that nobody else will if we don't all contribute to it somehow. And AmeriCorps is just an interesting way to make that happen. And to hear somebody recycling bicycle tubes, right?
That's great.
Doing stuff, it's pretty amazing.
Well, one of the things that this has in common with a lot of the other most innovative government programs is that this is a partnership with a community group. Here's this, this community cycling center that has a lot of volunteers, has volunteer leaders, is established as part of our community.
Right.
And so we, the people, are holding them accountable. It's not like these kind of runaway spending programs where nobody's paying attention. When government partners with the community, then we can all step up and say, oh, well, let's make sure we're doing the right stuff. Let's make sure we're really targeting this. And that's how you get this good stuff.
Social investment. Social investment. Well, Sushin, what else would you like to share with folks about AmeriCorps or about your experience or the Community Cycling Center, seeing as they're, I'm a big fan of them, too.
Well, I can share a story today that happened. I'm working with another AmeriCorps member, actually, that is at the Community Cycling Center. She focuses on bike art and outreach and education. So she has there's two of us there full-time. And we work a lot in conjunction, and we went out to Davis Elementary today and did bike art with some kids. We're going to be going out there every week, and we made the mustaches, and one kid, they were thinking of all these ideas of what you could do with bike art. And at the end of the day, he was getting on the bus, and he was like, all right, so next week for bike art, are you just going to turn us all into bikes? Because they were wearing parts of bikes all over them, and they're like, so next week are we just going to be bikes? I was like, yeah, way to go.
Well, that's great. I'm excited. This is good. I'd like to thank my guests tonight. I'd like to thank Susha Pratt for coming down here from the Community Cycling Center to share with us about how our tax money gets well spent in a program like AmeriCorps. And Reese Goles, who just had a, we could have talked all night about how unfair taxes are and what we can do to change those things. And I'd like to also thank Big Ben, my engineer, who does a bang-up job in there, and say happy birthday to my daughter Bree today, because that's a big thing for all of us. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to thank everybody out there who listened. Next week, I'm not sure what's going to happen next week on Labor Radio, but we're here every Monday from 6 to 7 next month. And I think it's the 20th, I'll be in doing a show about coffee. I'm going to have a bunch. I'm going to have, from the beans to the barista, we're going to talk about Portland's coffee economy, how much money goes through it, what fair trade coffee is all about, and which companies treat their workers well. So I'd like to thank you all for joining. And the song we're going to go out with, I was actually had an interesting experience last week. I was doing jury duty at the courthouse downtown, and all of a sudden somebody is testifying, and you hear this huge chorus of screams from outside. And it turned out that it was all these young Hispanic people who had met down at Terry Shrunk Plaza to protest for immigrant rights. And they actually had to shut the trial down and take a long lunch for us so the rally could get over and they could go on their march. And I thought that was pretty awesome. They actually shut down the Justice Center. So this is a great song by Los Lobos. And we'll see you next week on Labor Radio.
KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503 OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day. And also by AFSCME Local 3336, representing the employees of Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality by advocating for working conditions, pay and benefits, supporting political activity that promotes pro-environment and pro-labor positions, strengthening labor coalitions, and actively organizing members. More information at AFSCME3336.org. Could this here be a sign? It's time to go back home.